Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. Hi there, this is Tess. Before we get into this episode, a short message about an upcoming free webinar. If you've been wondering whether to market your translation and interpretation services during this pandemic, here are some non-salesy suggestions. First of all, keep in touch with and offer to help current clients. Second, focus on inbound marketing to make sure that those clients that do need your services will find you. There is no better time than now to review your online presence and make sure you are attracting your ideal clients. That's why I have created a new mini training, Online Marketing for Freelance Translators and Interpreters, how to transform your website and online presence into client-generating machines. In this webinar, you will learn what platforms and strategies you can use to attract your ideal clients to you, including your website, search engine optimization, and social media. You'll also get tips on how to use the right content to engage with prospects online, plus tips and tools to make the process faster and easier. This webinar is free, but you have to register. It will be held on May 6th at 8 a.m. Mountain Time, which is 3 p.m. Greenwich Time. If you can't make it live, you will get a recording that will be available for 48 hours if you've registered. So please go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com/online-marketing to register. And I will also put a link to this webinar in the show notes. Now on to the show. Hello and welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators with another episode on how to grow a successful freelance business. In this episode, we're going to talk about work-life balance, or rather, work-life priorities. With all the discussion about how to achieve work-life balance, so there's one thing that's been overlooked that these two ladies I have with me today has brought up. Our lives are not supposed to be balanced with equal time for everything. I have noticed myself that my life and my business goes in seasons, so I talk about seasons more. So can you be the executive who thrives at business, the mother who volunteers at your child's school, the friend who maintains an active social life, yet remain sexy, fit, and fun? Maybe for a short time, but it certainly isn't sustainable all the time, I believe. But before I invite my guests today, I wanted to give a listener shout out. This one goes to Marco Diaz Translations from the United States. He wrote a podcast review saying, "Ever since I started listening to this podcast, my enthusiasm for a career in translation has grown exponentially. Here you'll listen to excellent tips from successful and seasoned translators. The episodes are 40 to 45 minutes long, just the right time to listen to while you're doing menial tasks at home. This is the highlight of my day. I admire Tess Whitty for all the dedication in putting this together and especially for sharing it with other language professionals." So thank you so much, Marco. You helped me keep going with the podcast despite how much time and resources it really takes to produce. So thank you for taking the time to leave a review. Now over to the topic of the day, work-life priorities, and I would like to welcome two fellow translators and podcasters. They have a fairly new podcast called Smart Habits for Translators, and I have the pleasure of having them on the show today to talk about smart habits for creating work-life priorities as freelance translators. So welcome to the podcast, Maddalena Sampaolo and Veronica De Michelis.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Tess.
Thank you, Tess. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you. I love your podcast. So, and now that you've introduced yourself so many times and I've heard it on your podcast, I think I didn't butcher your names either.
Yeah, you did well.
So first, I want you to, for any listener who don't know who you are yet, please introduce yourselves and your careers in translation. And whoever wants to start can start.
Okay, I'll go first. My name is Veronica de Michelis. I am based in Houston, Texas, but I'm a native Russian. Grew up in Moscow. I started as a freelance translator 5 years ago. Before that, I worked for a large international company in Russia and Norway. I lived in Oslo for 7 years, and I had a long 18-year-long career in that company, you know, in the corporate world, and I really liked it. But after my husband and I moved to Texas and had kids, I felt that I wanted to be there for my kids and to be able to spend time with them. Mm-hmm. But I also love to work, so I didn't want to give that part up. But so I realized I wouldn't be against trying to become a freelancer and even change careers. At that point, I did have a degree in linguistics, which felt odd when I was working in oil and gas, mm-hmm. but that fit perfectly for my career as a freelance translator. So that's what I have been doing for the past 5 years. I work on translation and localization projects. I teach some classes for a local translation and interpreting program here in Houston, mm-hmm. and I volunteer for ATA and my local association here in Houston. And I have time and flexibility for the greatest priority in my life, my family.
You are quite busy.
Right.
You've achieved a lot in 5 years, I think.
Thank you.
So, but I also, I'm curious, you don't have much of an accent. English speaking parents or?
I don't know. Both my parents are native Russians. I studied English at school, and then when I took the master's degree in linguistics, obviously I studied English and also German and French. But I think it's because I worked for an international company since I was 18 years old, you know, and I was just exposed to people, both native speakers and people with all sorts of accents. And after having lived in Norway, and when we moved to Houston, people were telling me I have a Scandinavian accent. Mm-hmm. So I probably picked up, you know, a more of a, I don't know, American accent or something since we've lived in Houston now for 8 years. So
this comes from somebody who's not a native English either, so I don't know if I have the right to talk about accents either, but
of course you do.
People do tell me sometimes that they can't hear my accent. Some people can, some people can't. Mm-hmm. But I blame it on my husband. I've known him for over 25 years, and he's American.
Yeah.
And do you have a Russian husband?
No, my husband's French, actually.
Yeah. Wow.
So we're in an international family, and our kids, English is their main language, I think, since they were born and grew up and go to school here. But they do speak very good French and decent Russian. So hopefully they'll be trilingual.
Yes, I was going to say, are they trilingual? Are you always speaking your own language?
Yes. Yes, I do, and my husband does too. It's a work in progress, and it's a constant battle, especially as they grow up. Sometimes, you know, they start to resist speaking another language. Yes, you know.
It was easy until they were about 5, and I could just say, I don't understand what you're saying. You have to speak Swedish to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
But after that, they were on to me, and yeah.
Yeah.
So about the language again. So do you understand French, and does he understand Russian, your husband?
So I speak French. I mean, French is not one of my working languages, but I do speak it socially and with family. And he understands Russian, yeah. He's not fluent in it, but he's pretty good.
Because that makes it easier. Otherwise, I know I have a lot of Swedish friends here who stopped speaking Swedish to their children because their husband couldn't understand it.
My husband and I do speak English to each other, but when we address our kids and when we talk to our kids, we're able to understand what you know, the other person's saying. So that makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you. Now, Madalena, you've been on the podcast before, but if people didn't listen to that episode, let's introduce you.
Thanks. Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking. I am a Spanish and Portuguese medical and life sciences translator. I'm based in Southern California. I've been working as a freelancer for just over 12 years, and I have actually had several roles in our industry over the years. I started as a medical interpreter when I finished my graduate degree, and I also worked as a project manager and interpreter scheduler at a small language company. But that was a short time in the very beginning. And then my husband and I moved to Central Ohio, to Columbus, Ohio, for his PhD program. And I started doing some medical translation after my hours teaching at the university. I have taught language courses at Ohio State University. Mm-hmm. I had a background in teaching already from our graduate program. And so I taught both in-person and online courses. But I realized that what I truly wanted to pursue was translation. So I just continued to work on my craft until I could go full time and leave academia. So I have a small boutique language company, and I'm an active volunteer in the American Translators Association, which is where I met both of you. Mm-hmm. And I teach online courses for translators and interpreters about how to improve their online presence as well.
And you're the president-elect for ATA, right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Busy also. And you have a 3-year-old.
And I have a 3-year-old, yeah.
Good. Well, thank you. So the reason you're on here today is because you have started a podcast too called Smart Habits for Translators, which I love. Why did you decide to start this podcast?
Yeah, so basically we wanted to talk about the things that no one else really tells you when you become a freelancer. Mm-hmm. We mostly discuss topics related to work-life clarity and how to create habits that will help you in your business and at home. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really taken off. We launched the podcast in October of 2019, mm-hmm. and we have listeners now in over 40 countries.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been really fun to put together. And Veronica is just such an excellent colleague to work with on the podcast. I always we were actually talking about how we started it. And I told her I will not do a podcast if I have to do any of the audio editing. Mm-hmm. So she does that part specifically. We kind of each have our own roles, which is really nice. But yeah, our conversations come together really easily. And lucky for me, Veronica is so easy to work with. So. Mm-hmm.
And the editing takes a lot of time. I did it for the first few episodes, but now I have somebody else do it for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's, as you said in the beginning, you know, responding to a review by one of your listeners, when you get great feedback and you see that people are really responding, this is the best motivation to keep going forward. Mm-hmm. We're so lucky that we get to do it together with Madalena. You know, we've met through, as she mentioned, we met through ATA and our involvement with ATA. Mm-hmm. But I feel that we had immediately connected on several levels, and we found ourselves having these long conversations about work and family, volunteering and kids and health and personal interests. And when one day she mentioned that she had been thinking of doing a podcast, mm-hmm. And asked me if I was interested in doing it together, I didn't hesitate. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, it happened that I had some experience producing podcasts for ATA Slavic Languages Division and Houston Interpreters and Translators Association. Mm-hmm. And as Madalena, I also felt that there's a great vibe between us, and there's a lot of topics that could be of interest for to other people, to our colleagues that are not necessarily always covered. So we just decided to start this podcast together and jumped right in.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, I started the podcast also for my own sort of to share marketing tips, but also for my own sake. I hate hearing my own voice recorded.
Mine too. I don't like it either.
Yeah. No, like isn't it either. That funny?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it feels very awkward, especially in the beginning.
I think it's also one of the reasons I don't edit it myself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the part I have really had to, you know, it was a struggle for me at the beginning, though the editing, like the technical aspect of editing wasn't too difficult, but it was, you know, the fact of hearing my voice and getting very picky with, you know, the different sounds you wanted to remove or like the pauses. And I think I'm more neutral to it now, but it was hard in the beginning.
I remember I put in more bass in the beginning because I think I sound like a 10-year-old all the time.
So. I don't think so. It's funny because I tell Veronica all the time, I'm like, your voice sounds so like great and soothing on this podcast. And I'm the one who kind of sounds like I'm all over the place. And it's funny how we hear ourselves, but how we hear other people differently.
Yeah. Exactly. But thank you so much for the compliment too, Tess. We really appreciate that you're listening to our podcast, and I have been a longtime listener of yours, so it's extra special to be with you today.
Good. Yes, I'm a podcast junkie. I think that's a great way to learn things these days.
Audiobooks,
because I don't have time, or I don't want to read business books late at night.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Anyway, so now we are all freelance translators, and we have one of the reasons we became freelancers is the freedom when it comes to creating our businesses, and we can work around the rest of our lives and our priorities, right? So do you have any tips on how to do this successfully?
Yeah, I think this is one of the best parts about being a freelancer, right? Is the freedom that we get with it. In my mind, the best thing you can do is to set your priorities. What comes first in your life? What do you value? And from there, you can work out your own, what we like to call work-life clarity, which we heard actually on another podcast, The Deliberate Freelancer. Mm-hmm. And which we just so happened to also have a full episode on, by the way. I think it was our first episode.
First episode.
Yes.
Yeah. And then from there, you can set some real boundaries. You know, for me, it was a real aha moment, if you will, when I realized that our boundaries that we set thinking of other people are really boundaries that we should be setting for ourselves. You know, when I think about, I need to, prioritize, this or that over something else. And then I think, well, it's not that anybody else is setting, is encroaching on my boundaries unless I allow them to.
Yes.
Right. So if we don't respect our own boundaries, then how can we expect others to do the same for us? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that is a constant work in progress. And I laughingly say this, but it is fairly true, is that freelancers, we love our work and we love the freedom that comes with our work, but sometimes we're our own worst boss.
Yes.
You know, we can work extensive hours, even more than we would work working for someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had this battle with my boss for 10 years and I'm finally getting somewhere about vacation. I take up to 8 weeks of vacation a year now, and it's been a battle.
I'm glad.
Open the computer all the time when I'm traveling and stuff. So
it is hard. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I had this silly thought when I first decided to go freelance and, quit the corporate career, become a freelancer, change careers, become a translator. I had this silly thought that, I'll be my own boss and I get to go to bed without thinking about work. And I laugh thinking about it because I've learned that working for yourself, you don't just work the regular 40 hours a week or something. As a salaried employee, you work way more, and you have to invest much more time and energy and passion into your business, and also being a service provider, other people's agenda naturally becomes the priority often. You have to be there for your clients, or if you're volunteering, you also want to put some effort into it. So it can be easy to say yes to too many things and to make, it'll be just an exception, or I'll make this compromise, or I'll sacrifice a little bit of personal time for this important job or for this important task. And you just get into this habit of breaking promises that you made to yourself when you first started out. And there's no magic formula to stop doing that, but it's an ongoing effort, and boundaries are really important here, and something I have to remind myself every day. For example, my priority right now is obviously being there for my kids when they need me. Mm-hmm. And another priority is my health. So I structure my work day with that in mind. And mm-hmm. I say yes or no to things that, you know, pop in on my screen, whether it's a computer or phone. And so I juggle those based on my commitments, my personal commitments. So I create boundaries and I constantly practice enforcing these boundaries. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it means that I lose a lucrative business opportunity, but other times it means that I get a great project to work on and a great client, and I still have time for my family and for myself. So I do it on my own terms. Mm-hmm. And another key aspect that I've learned is to keep being kind to yourself and not comparing your progress to someone else's. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you can't have big dreams and set big goals. You just, you know, chip away at them at your own pace. Someone else may do it faster than you because they are in a different season of life or a different stage of life, but you mm-hmm. just do your own thing and stay true to your priorities.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking about seasons, and I just wanted—I know you both have young kids now. So, mm-hmm. Are one of your priorities then to not work weekends?
Definitely.
Yes. Yes.
And how mm-hmm. does that? How is that going?
Yeah. Well, for me, it can be a little bit difficult sometimes with my work through the American Translators Association, because there are some things that if I can't get them done during the week, I do find myself
yes.
having to open my computer on the weekends. But I try, if I have to do that, to only do it during her nap time. I'm lucky enough that she still takes a nap. Mm-hmm. I know that won't last forever. But I'm, you know, this is a newer role for me. I've been on the board for several years before I became president-elect, and there is a huge amount of work. There's a big difference between, you know, being a board member and having this position now, mm-hmm. which I, you know, it's a privilege to do. But at the same time, I have to also set those boundaries and know, you know, when it's time to, okay, say this can wait until Monday, or this, you know, is something I need to handle right now. So yeah, it is, there's sort of a, like you say, there are seasons, and I know that this is not going to last forever. I also realize that, this is a position that some people don't take, at the same, you know, stage and age that I am right now. They take mm-hmm. it later. And I had thought about that too, but I decided, you know, for me right now, this was the right time. So in knowing that, I know that I have to say no to other things as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a kind of constant finding balance.
And I remember when my kids were younger, I was working all over the place schedule, because you had mm-hmm. to really, like when they were away in preschool, I was working, but then I also had to work a little bit at night after they went to bed sometimes. And I don't know, that's how it was now. Now, once they started school, the schedule became a little bit more normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And sometimes you never know. I mean, they could be homesick. Mine's in preschool as well, mm-hmm. but they could be homesick one day and, you know, that could throw everything off. And yeah, you do find yourself working into the evenings, but, you know, like you said before, that's the beauty of being a freelancer, is that you have certain freedoms that you wouldn't have in another job. So
yes, if we were in a cubicle, then we would not be able to be available for our children that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for, you know, for me, it's the same. I my goal is to not work evenings and weekends, and I am way stricter about these boundaries now, because 2 years ago I experienced burnouts because mm-hmm. I took on too much. Mm-hmm. You know, I was growing my freelance business. I was teaching 5 classes for the local translation program that I mentioned earlier. And I was volunteering in several associations. So I realized after a while that I'm not experiencing stress. I'm actually at a burnout stage. So I had to cut back on a lot of things I said yes to previously and stop teaching. I took a year off from that and just focused on really, you know, defining my boundaries and my priorities. And now now that I'm coming back to teaching, I'm really strict with myself, first of all, that I do not work on weekends. The only exception to that would be if I, if one of my kids was sick for a few days at home and I had to prioritize them. And then if I had to catch up on work, I would do it in the evenings and on a weekend. But it's really, really rare nowadays.
Yeah, burnout can be really debilitating. I don't think I've had it myself, but I've heard so many people experiencing it. So it's nice to hear that you can get out of it. without being sick or at home for a long time.
Right, yeah.
So, okay. But this is also a marketing podcast. So, and as freelancers, we have to market our businesses all the time if we want to grow and if we want to get better clients and if we want to have a regular income. How can we align our marketing with our work life priorities? Whoever wants to start can start.
Yeah, I'll go first. So, I really want to make sure that, the client's expectations are aligned with what I can, what I'm willing to, deliver in terms of availability and time and all of that. So I spend quite some time researching potential clients before I go out and market to them myself. Mm-hmm. And not just, on the usual sort of translators, forums, or websites where you can read people's feedback about working for different companies. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't be very helpful if you're looking at a potential direct client. So I go on companies' websites and their social media, their LinkedIn pages, and I try to understand better what type of culture this company has. And this is where my degree in human resources comes into play. And I spent many years working with recruitment, organizational culture, and communication. So I feel that I'm able to pick up on subtle things like this. And you can get a good understanding of this by looking at the language the company uses, and they're reading their copy and really paying attention to the language they use, because it can indicate what they stand for and what they expect of their staff, of their translation partners, if it's an agency, and what they promise to their clients. Because if they are promising their clients quick turnaround or this and that, you can really tell that this is going to be the burden of the translators to bear. And I also look at their employee activity on LinkedIn or in different groups they belong to. And I try to get a sense of the culture in that company by reading what they post there to see if it fits with what I am able and willing to offer. As for the process of marketing itself, my starting point, again, is what I am able and willing to offer. And if I can't offer quick 1-hour turnaround, I don't. If I can't offer being available to my clients 24/7, I don't. So I just don't make these promises. And I focus on the value that I can bring and really underline what makes my work stand out.
So, but what about, how often do you doing the research for a potential client takes a lot of time?
Yes.
How do you prioritize this? And do you do this regularly? Do you have set times for research and marketing?
Right. So for me, it goes in phases, because there are times, times where I'm more busy than others, like, since September, October last year through April now, I am basically fully booked. So I haven't been able to really prioritize marketing that much. That being said, I do think that in order to avoid the feast of famine cycle, you do need to do it regularly, because a lot of the things that I like to do are long-term play. You know, it's not quick results. So I make myself do it once a week at least, you know, in the periods where I'm really busy and I don't need a client right away, but I would like to stay on someone's radar. I just put the time in my schedule and my to-do list once a week to either research a client or start crafting a warm email or a message to a potential client. So for me right now, it's once a week. In the periods where I have more availability, I do it more often. And right now I'm participating in Corinne McKay's March Marketing Madness, where you have to do one little marketing thing every day. And it's really helpful to get into that rhythm and kind of get into the habit of doing it all the time.
Yes, I was in that last year too. So. What about you, Madalena?
Yeah, it's so nice to hear what other people do as well, I have to say. I was also in the March Marketing Madness last year, and I thought it was great too. I mean, there were a couple of things that I have done in the past marketing wise that they did in that program, and that reminded me, like, oh yeah, I can be doing this. One of those was, you know, what Corinne calls nudging a dormant client. I think that's really important to do on a regular basis with clients you haven't talked to in a while, because sometimes they do have something in the pipeline or they are thinking about something coming up. And I did that. I remember during that particular challenge, I did that on whatever day it was that it was assigned in the challenge. And I ended up getting a project back the same day from a client for about $1,300. So it wasn't, you know, it was no small thing. I mean, it was a small thing for me to do, but the return was big, right? So yeah, but this is a great question for me. I know that I like to work with clients who respect the times that I'm in the office and when I'm not. So kind of like what we were talking about earlier about, do you work at night or do you work on the weekends and so on? When I first started, I didn't have any kids, right? And so I needed work, and I had clients who would call me on the weekends even. And at first I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. But I realized that they do that because there are translators who are willing to take on that work and answer their phone on the weekends and so on. But at the same time, I realized that for me, this is not normal. So I made a decision not to pursue clients who operate this way, or, you know, it's hard to know that up front, but I mean, it's sort of like what Veronica was saying. You can do some research ahead of time to know about this type of thing. Talk to colleagues who might be working with certain clients as well, if it's maybe an agency or something like that, and really see what it is that is important to you, and if that, you know, type of client lines up with those priorities. And I just decided not to work with clients who expected immediate turnarounds or answers. And this became particularly clear when I had a baby, because obviously anytime you're asking for something with a quick turnaround, there's always that sense of panic that this mom maybe doesn't cooperate. And so I knew that the type of client that I needed to market to or accept jobs from had to be okay with not receiving things like same day turnarounds and so forth, unless it was something very small, but for most of the projects, you know. And so another way I think to do this well is just to let clients know what it's like to work with you from the very beginning. If you've got something like an onboarding package or a document as part of your marketing and sales process, then you can actually kind of form this conversation yourself. Let them know what they can expect from you as far as your office hours, your vacation time, the best way to reach you. You don't have to give them your cell phone number, right? And so on.
Do you have a welcome package?
I do. Yeah, I do. And it's just like a 1 to 2 page document that I give to clients. It's kind of like, you know, thanks for reaching out to me. And I don't give it to them after they've signed a contract with me. I give it to them before so that they know from the beginning, like, this is how things are going to work. And it's something that goes outside the zone of what it would be in a contract. It's really more like, here are the expectations that you can have of me. And this is what it's like to work with me. And I think people really appreciate that type of direction. I mean, nobody's going to ask you for it. Yeah, I think
so. Is this both for agencies and direct clients?
Yes.
Okay. That's great. That's a great idea. And I just wanted to, based on both of your answers, I just wanted to stress this, because I have many listeners and many students and many followers that feel victimized, that they have to accept these conditions in order to get work. And that budget, instead of trying to negotiate, they just accept it. And I just wanted to stress that the demand for translations is bigger than the supply of professional translators. And there are clients, enough clients for all of us out there. It's just that we have to really actively ourselves go out and find the ones that are right for us.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Stepping down from my soapbox. Our work-life priorities, though, they do change during different seasons of our careers. We talked about this a little bit already. But I want to talk about it when it comes to the seasons of being a translator or freelancer. Mm-hmm. So what should our priorities be when we first start out, mid-career, and perhaps when we approach retirement?
So our work-life priorities really do shift over time. It's kind of what we've already been talking about a little bit, but I think that that's a good thing, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we can't possibly be working 100 miles an hour our entire lives because, mm-hmm. as Veronica said, there comes a point when you will burn out, mm-hmm. and it can affect your health. So I would say that if you're first starting out and you have a lot of time, you should be marketing as much as possible. If you don't have any clients yet, you should be marketing maybe 90 to 100% of the time that you're working. Mm-hmm. You can scale back on that as you pick up clients, but unless you're fully booked on a regular basis, I don't think you should be marketing. I mean, I think you should be marketing often and consistently. And then if you're looking to wind down, let's say you're close to retirement, then maybe you should make sure that you can determine how much you need to make each month in order to cover your expenses and set aside money for retirement savings and so on. And honestly, I think we should all be doing that anyway, not just mm-hmm. if we're close to retirement, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So that's kind of the way that I look at it.
But it's hard as doing that as freelancers, especially in the beginning, to start thinking mm-hmm. about, oh, I need to save for retirement too.
Yeah. But, yeah. But the earlier, right, the earlier they always say, the better, because then, you know, it just will go much more smoothly. We actually have an episode coming up. I think it's going to come up before this one airs with you about financial habits. So that might help some people out.
That sounds good. I look forward to that. Veronica, do you have anything to add about seasons and beginners, mid-career and veterans?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that wherever you are, your priorities are really define everything else. You know, your priorities and boundaries is what will be the foundation for your marketing plan and your professional goals. So starting out, I assume you have more availability, maybe more time, unless you already have kids, to really market yourself a lot and definitely work on your area of specialization and working on getting that in-depth knowledge. So that could be an interesting conversation with yourself, sort of to strike up. How do you find that balance between learning and actually implementing what you learn and marketing? I think whatever season of our career we're in, it's really important to pay attention to making meaningful personal connections with colleagues. Because there's different options on how to use your professional network and how you could partner up with colleagues at all three of the stages that you mentioned. You know, in the beginning, you can partner with your colleagues to exchange feedback on your translation skills, to mm-hmm. serve as each other's accountability partner if you're marketing, working on some marketing tasks together. You can even sort of form a translators collective or something, like an informal work together in that sense. And mid-career, partner with colleagues to keep pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and continuing to grow in the area of your specialization. And approaching retirement, professional network is really important as well. Well, for that last part, I sort of lack a personal perspective because my father worked until he passed away. And mm-hmm. after he retired from his corporate career, he started working as a freelancer. Mm-hmm. My mom still works, but I do have a lot of friends and colleagues who worked with me in the corporate career that I had before. And when they retired from that, they became freelancers. So I think just looking at what they did, I'm very humble in admitting that I don't have the answers, but I'm curious about what worked for them. And it seems like, again, the first step for them was to identify what is their priority, how much time do they have, are they willing to work at all, or do they want to just take a break? Mm-hmm. And are they interested in teaching others, becoming a consultant, becoming a speaker, writing books? You know, really it all starts with what do you want to do? What are your priorities in life?
And I think that being a freelancer or our profession is that we can continue working into old age because we set our own priorities and schedules. So if we want, but I think what is important to think about even early on is to not put ourselves in a situation where we have to continue working
exactly
full time.
Yes.
So, all right. The last question is a question I ask everyone. So you both have your own businesses. So let's, I think you know who wants to start, but what marketing strategy works really well for you right now in your business?
For me, right now, the things I enjoy the most doing right now and see the biggest impact, at least in a way it works for me with my schedule and my availability, is I focus on LinkedIn because it's a professional platform. The way you communicate and interact with people there is very unobtrusive but still very professional, and I feel that communication style is very respectful. You don't come across, unless you're really trying to come across as a, you know, someone who's insisting on making sales, you can just stay very low-key and respectful and professional. And you're able to see who the different people are connected to, if you have anything in common. They're able to, if they're interested, to take a quick glance at your profile, they'll see who you are connected to, what experience you have, and what you're offering. So I find it very easy to connect with people this way, even people I've never met before, or people I maybe meet at a networking event. And there's less pressure than if I were sending them a cold email or a warm email. And another strategy that works for me well right now is personal connections. And by that, I mean meeting potential clients at client-side conferences and local networking events, and also volunteering to present on topics related to translation at meetings that are run by client-side associations. And this is how you establish, again, this personal relationship with people. You can interact with them without being looking like you're selling your services, but more doing them a service by explaining how they can buy a translation in general, you know. But still, your name, you kind of become memorable, and they remember that this is what you do. And this is a long game. You can't expect immediate results, but I'm very comfortable doing it right now.
So would you say that your target clients, you are local to where you live?
Not necessarily. Some of them are, at least for those local associations that I came out and talked to them at their meetings, they are local. But some of these companies are international. So they would then go, oh, we have a colleague in this office who would need your services. Or maybe they're looking for a translator in another language pair for another office in another state. And I'm able to connect them with a colleague who works in that language pair.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you one question that I get all the time from my students about LinkedIn. Do you use LinkedIn Premium?
I tried it. I tried it a couple of times. I feel that I didn't get all of the options that were available to me. I didn't utilize it to its full effect the first time I tried it, but I really enjoyed the second time I tried it for a couple of months. And that option of connecting with more people that you normally cannot send them a message, or, you know, you can't really see much, but that premium version allows you to do that. And I really utilized it better, I think.
And you can see who has checked out your profile.
Exactly, yes.
And I just wanted to add for the listeners then too that my answer to the question is that I do it in seasons. I do it maybe once a month during the year or something, 1 to 2 months a year, when I'm really focusing marketing on LinkedIn. So, for example, for me, January is usually a slow month. So I usually activate premium then and spend more time there.
Yeah.
Okay, over to you, Madalena. What marketing strategy works really good, well, for you, your company?
Yeah, so I do also work on, you know, making connections on LinkedIn. I actually have a webinar about this, and I use the free version myself, but I know that people have used the premium version, and there's kind of different results that come from that for different people. So there are ways to make good connections with people and to use it very strategically to make those connections. And it's kind of like what Veronica was saying. The idea there is connections. We're not using LinkedIn to make hard sales. It's really to make the connection first and then to show that you are an expert at what you do, so that people will come to the conclusion to work with you or refer you to someone else. Mm-hmm. So LinkedIn does work very well. It's actually, I feel like LinkedIn has made quite a comeback in many ways. Mm-hmm. But also, for me, consistent blogging and meeting people at networking events and conference has been huge. They both have worked really well for me over the years. The blogging part for me means that my business gets a lot of visibility online because it's showing up in search engines for new content that's relevant to my potential clients. Mm-hmm. And as far as in-person events go, just showing up where my potential clients are and networking with them, engaging with them, offering them value where I can. I've gotten actually a lot of really good anchor clients by doing this.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And it's great for you because Spanish is very much needed here in the United mm-hmm. States. So it's also easier, I think, to network and find clients that need Spanish translations.
Yeah, I mean,
or Spanish to English.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. It really depends on the event. I mean, for as a freelancer, I have actually found that just making connections with people at conferences and then following up with them mm-hmm. has, you know, and not following up with them in a way. When I say that, I don't mean like to sell them my services. I mean, just, you know, to be in touch with them. I can think of one recently was a person I didn't actually think would be a client of mine. I followed up with her about something that she had done, and I had already met her at a conference, but I saw something she had done online, and I just wrote to her, said, I really appreciated this that you put out there for everybody. It was very useful. And she wrote back to me. She said, hey, actually, we could use a translator. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the types of things that if you just continue to connect with people, and I know this is a buzzword these days, but it's true, but in an authentic way, mm-hmm. It is really the way to go as far as, you know, long-term business relationships.
So what are your preferred networking events to go to? Do you focus on your area of specialization or just going to any business event locally?
So where I live in Southern California, there are a lot of business events here. Mm-hmm. I live close to Los Angeles. And so just in this area alone, we have a lot of opportunities to go to events that are, you know, either national or international events. Mm-hmm. So I take a look at those during the year and see what is near me. And also, so that could be in my areas of specialization, but also if I'm trying to market my small language company, then I might go to something where somebody might need translation in several languages. But there's a course coming up that I'm really interested in taking that Michelle Hansen is teaching for Corinne McKay's Training for Translators. Mm-hmm. And it's about concepts for medical translators. But the reason that I even paid attention to it is because I heard Michelle Hansen on Corinne and Eve's podcast talking about client-facing events mm-hmm. And how she's gotten a lot of work out of that. And she is also a medical and life sciences translator like I am, mm-hmm. but she works with all types of organizations, and she's actually really built up her client portfolio by attending these events and just being there, being, you know, providing valuable information to people. And so I'm really interested in her perspective on that, because it is something that I think that, at least in my field, a lot of people think, oh, you can only work with agencies because, yes, you know, you work the pharmaceutical companies work with the agencies, and that's not mm-hmm. always true. I mean, yes, many of them do, of course, mm-hmm. that is for sure. But, you know, there are other types of professionals that attend these types of conferences. And so I feel like we can just learn a lot from each other about how to market our services and connect with people that we wouldn't normally have the chance to connect with on an everyday basis.
That's great to know. Do you know if this course with Michelle is starting soon? I mean, should I publish it in the show notes, or will it be over by then?
I'll have to give you the dates. I don't really quite recall if it's in April or May, but it's specifically a course for medical translators, so it's not a marketing course. But you could okay. publish in your show notes a link to the podcast episode that, you know, she did with yes. Corinne and Eve, great. Because I can tell you, I found that that was one of the most useful podcast episodes I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, let's put that link in the show notes.
Okay, I'll send it to you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for your insights and for sharing your philosophy on work-life priorities instead of balance. It's been a long podcast, but I think it gets longer because we are three people. So thank yeah. you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And just to summarize, the truth is that some things should take priority over others, and we can only focus on one priority at a time. So it changes, I believe. And that's why we've been talking about seasons in this podcast. And many of us have gotten pretty good at prioritizing our schedule, and scheduling our priorities should also be a real goal. I also want to say thank you to the listeners for more marketing tips and monthly free checklist to grow your translation business. Make sure you're subscribed to the newsletter at marketingtipsfortranslators.com. And this is also where you can find the show notes with all the links mentioned in this episode and more about Smart Habits for Translators, the podcast. I encourage you to go check it out if you haven't already. This is going to be episode 241, so you can just put that in the search bar. And by the way, also, have you noticed that I have a new intro and outro? What do you think? I would love to hear. And I also have a new cover image for the podcast. It feels good with a little update after almost 6 years of podcasting. So thank you again to Madalena and Veronica. Thank you to the listeners. I wish you all a great week, and I will see you in the next episode.
Thanks, Tess.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app, or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.